Right, we've got a lively discussion going, obviously. Can't stop all the talking, it's great. Obviously, we need about another 3 or 4 hours so that people can discuss this issue to their heart's content. Okay, I think that's pretty high energy, Gail.
That's good.
Okay, so we got some great questions from you all, so I'm going to jump right in with Rebecca. The first was, what's your opinion on gender quotas in Parliament or within political parties? And I'm going to combine it with, what specific challenges to becoming leaders do women face in Latin America, and how can society help overcome them? We only have 8 minutes for this, so this is going to be pretty quick for each of these questions.
Okay, let me first say that I think that quotas are absolutely necessary. The experience of Latin America is very clear. In the countries where there is no quotas, there is no stability in the representation of women in anything, not in government, not in parliament, not at the municipality level. So the only countries that have really stable representation of women are those countries that have women quotas inside the political parties to get to political elected position. And that's the case of my country, and I'm very proud of that. With respect to the agenda, there are 3 items in the agenda, in my opinion, for women in Latin America. First, advocacy to have women representation as a political issue and mobilizing votes for that political issue. Second, public financing is key. Public financing is key for women to get to the position. And third, to get indigenous and rural women and poor women to positions of power, because they are not getting there. Indigenous women are not getting there, and the other vulnerable groups of women are not getting there. So we need to do much more for them.
Okay. Indeedy, you're next. Is there a single request we could make that we could put forward to be addressed tomorrow in the closing plenary? And I'm combining, I'm making it hard for you. How can men, especially those in influential roles, contribute to the welfare of women?
Okay, I'll start off with the first one in terms of men. I think men have an important role to play because they're not only our brothers, they are fathers, and they are sons. And I think when you look at men, the role first that they play in families, how do they raise their sons? How do they raise their daughters? I think we need to start at the family level to ensure that there's equality in roles and in opinions. In the companies, we need to have women break through the glass ceiling, which means that there needs to be a lot of mentoring, coaching, support, changes in policy around maternity leaves. In my country, there's still an issue where women are told, don't get pregnant in the first 2 years of working in the bank. If you do, you lose your job. Policies like that should not continue to hold. And then we also need women, men supporting women in political lives. We have a lot of male godfathers. We need men to be godfathers for women, fund their political campaigns, support them, hire them as partners, and work with them. I think if we can have men working at all levels of society to support women and to change mindsets of fellow men, we'll see a change. In terms of a single request, I think that we'll talk more about this at the closing, but the issue has been raised of the role of women at the UN and why women can't be given more of a voice and funding. We've talked about UNIFEM not being as effective as it should be. So what this recommendation is that we actually get women to be at the forefront, whether it's getting them a seat at the Security Council or having the women's issues incorporated at all levels of UN funding. And the question was, should it be a full UN secretariat? And I think that we're tired of women's issues being put aside in their own department. We want women's issues to be an integral part of every UN decision.
Thank you. Safa, 2 questions for you. You also wanted to address the quota issue, and then very specifically, people want to know how to get women to be part of the Darfur peace talks in Libya next month.
Okay. We had the experience in the 7 rounds of the peace talk in 2005. We had already been in the negotiation, and we have been kicked out. But the Darfur peace agreement, which is so fragile, but it guarantees that women participation at the different levels of the peace process. From that angle, we are now promoting ourselves, and we are creating alliances called Darfur Women Alliances for Peace. We are working together with the UN and with the AU and UNIFEM as well in order to use the affirmative action in the constitution as well as the DPA. Already we have a prepared document called Darfur Women Priority for Peace and Reconstruction, and this has been considered as a lobbying, official lobbying document by UN and AU when we were in the negotiation last time. The only issue we need to work on that is the issue of the capacity to prepare ourselves for the next round. What are the gaps? What having been fulfilled in the seventh rounds has to be fulfilled. We developed priorities like victim funds. This is one of the priorities. Darfur Women Rehabilitation Fund, and the issue of land and issue of land and access to justice. This is, has a link also in the Darfur Peace Agreement, the affirmative action of women representation by 25%. And we are going, this is a guarantee. And we are going to cater for even more. We are using AU Human Rights Protocol on Women. We think about 30%. And the gender parity in the AU, because AU is taking the negotiations. So we are using different techniques and mechanisms. But we think what we need fund to support women to get prepared for the next round, and a clear vision of how we can endorse us into the negotiation. Are we going to be directly in the negotiation, or like last time, we were part of called Gender Expert Support Team to provide assistance for the government and for the movement. But we are trying to be directly in the negotiation table.
Thank you. Okay, so we have 1 minute left for one more, 2 minutes, luckily there. We got an extra minute. So I'm going to turn to you, Ndidi, again. What efforts are required to align families with the new cultural paradigms being taught to girls about their potential? And I know you've talked a lot about that before.
I think from my own experience, what we have what we are seeing with families is that there's a big dichotomy between being a traditional woman and a modern woman, at least in the African society, because women have a lot of roles that they're playing. Similar to men, the pressure on them as daughters, so they're caring for their parents who are aging, and they're expected to care for their parents who are aging in a society with no social safety nets. Their mothers, and in most countries, the average, at least in Nigeria, about each woman has about 6 to 7 children. They're also wives. And we see their role in the economy with 70% of agriculture being cultivated by women. So in that setting, when you think about the struggle with women trying to grow their economic base and move up in society, having these roles, we come back to the issue of Latin America, where women are overburdened and feel a constant strain. And I think on a positive note, what can we do about that? One is support groups, and we're seeing more of those. Linkages, associations, networks where women are supporting each other. And if we can generate more of them, fund them, we'll see a greater difference. We need more funding to support capacity. The media plays a very important role, even in the West, about how women are viewed and how families are viewed, and whether you can have two working people in a family. So I think those who are in charge of Hollywood in this room who can influence what we see, because we do watch Hollywood. We also have Nollywood in Nigeria, which is a booming industry. So we need to affect the media, and that's a very practical solution. How does the media portray women? How does the media portray this dichotomy between being a traditional woman and a modern woman?
Let's look at the text in education, because many of the texts are not changing in terms of the roles of men and women that men and women play in society. And we are seeing many women that do not follow any scientific career because they lose it in high school because of bad education. So this is also key for them.
Thank you. Gail?
Thank you all. I just want to add something that occurred to me when, Safa, you were speaking about Darfur. There's progress in that an annex, if you will, or there's an impact on the Darfur peace negotiations coming from the women's agenda. The progress we're talking about is that women's agenda would be the backbone of the peace agreement, because it's the difference between negotiating between people who have enough arms to get to the table versus negotiating between people who have enough ideas to get to the table. So thank you all for pointing us in that direction, and all of you for some really great ideas and solutions here. So let me go through these, and they'll be on the slides. Solutions for empowering women leaders. Reform property laws to encourage female ownership and develop institutions to increase financing access, access to financing. Promote laws that ensure inheritance runs through both male and female family lines. Education for young women and developing leaders is crucial. This is the mentoring I think we've heard about consistently. Catalyze cross-sector women's networks and fund technical assistance to support those connections. Educate men about the importance of creating better opportunities for women and the role men can and should play. We've heard lots of concrete ideas about how to do this, and it's just not that hard to do. Focus on practical solutions to meeting household needs to free women's time and energy, gathering clean water and cooking facilities. I think we had strong consensus between the panel and our audience on implementing quotas for women's representation in government, business, boards, and procurement and supply chains, and use shareholder activism to encourage this. So that's taking your idea, adding another piece, and saying, by the way, let's get behind and put some real weight to the shareholders behind it. Promote change in the work culture, and not just the number of hours spent in the office, but develop what's called flex time and job sharing. A couple of gems. This first one is great. Create a brain gain. We've all heard about the brain drain. Create a program to sponsor women expatriates to return to their home countries as community leaders. We have one right here, and look what she has done. Gem, sponsor a scholarship program to allow young women leaders to participate in international conferences. This is really important. I can't tell you how often I've been a part of organizing something, and there are these dynamite young leaders that we want to get there, and they may come from young institutions that simply do not have the ability to get there. So that's a really critical need, and it can make a huge difference, both in exposing them and exposing us. Create an international women's elders program to raise the profile of issues and mentor upcoming leaders. That's another really very good idea that I think encapsulates the notion that this is about the whole of community. Now, with the blessings and encouragement of the panel, I want to do something that is technically illegal in the way CGI runs, but that's okay, nobody's watching. And we had one other idea from the floor that we thought it would be useful to hear. So, Jim Witten, you have a microphone to offer up the last gem.
Thank you, Gail and panel. The jury is no longer out. In the area of poverty alleviation, this is by far the most important thing to have happen. And yet there are empty tables in this room, empty seats. None of us, I know, are interested in slowing the process of poverty alleviation. But for us to accelerate it, and I'm now speaking as us being the men in this room, we're going to have to wake up, educate ourselves, clumsily try different things, and really stand for this actively. And as an example of doing that, I want to start today with an invitation that each of us men in this room express our commitment to stand for and with our sisters here and around the world by standing up right now. If you'd like to do that and are willing to, please do. Onward.
Thank God you did it. Okay, back to you.
Make sure that the CGI has at least five sessions on the next. Yeah.
well, it looks like this group has a very loud voice. So there's a lot of impact by you telling people involved in the CGI that this is a session that needs to be a regular part and there needs to be women and girls integrated into this whole agenda on a regular basis, not just this year on this panel. So your voice is really important. Use your voice, just like we... Men on the panel. Next time there'll be a male moderator with all men panelists. So I'm struck that I just came back from Liberia, and I was meeting with someone from the private sector who's trying to develop the rubber tree industry there, which is really critically important for that country to recover. And I asked, well, what kind of jobs would there be for girls and women in your industry? I don't know anything about the rubber industry. And he started to walk through it, and he said, well, there's planting, and there's caring for the trees, et cetera, and they do traditionally tend to do that role, but women don't do the tapping. And I said, well, that's interesting. I don't even know what tapping is, but what would that be? And that's just basically to put a cup there. He said, oh, it's not labor-intensive at all. That's not why the women not in that job. And so the other people at the dinner said, well, why? Why then women don't do that job? And he said, oh, it's so simple. And this is from a businessman's perspective. He said, that's where the cash is. So I think what's interesting about a lot of your feedback today is everyone in their comments and their suggestions was looking for real, concrete places of power. Where is it that decisions are made? Where is it that people's lives are directed in another direction? We talk about access to capital, but microfinance is very small. What is it that will help this grow to the kind of scale to the challenge that we all have? So let's go to each of you quickly, because there are just some spectacular suggestions here for some comments. Rebecca, do you want to go first? Oh, maybe not.
Let me go. I think that it's very important to scale up the microfinance issue, to really link the microfinance or the alternative ways of women getting a credit to the savings of the country. Because what happens is that you always have these small funds for women, and all the credit of the country goes, you know, somewhere else because it's linked to the savings potential of the country. So it's key to really link these alternative schemes to the schemes of savings and the mainstream, where the mainstream of money is. And there are ways to do that, and there are people that is trying to do that. So I think that that's a key element to really break the cycle of small things for women, you know, that work, but in small scale.
Great. Safi, was there a specific suggestion here that you feel like if it was just the one that you would choose, that you think would be the most powerful in affecting real change, which would that be? We have only a minute and just over a minute left here.
For young women and developing leaders is critical.
Oh, microphone.
Yeah, the issue of education and creation of young leaders, because we need also to sustain these leadership issues and the voice to be heard, and especially for young girls and women and young girls and boys. And that is critical in terms of creation of opportunities and a generation that can lead for a change. This is one of the critical and important things which I want to, because education has been mentioned so as an instrumental tool for change. And when you create,
you.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, great. And which one touched you the most? I feel like you could, this would really make a difference if we could.
Well, I mean, something just practical for everyone here is this International Women Elders Program. Mm-hmm. I think that mentorship is great. I've benefited a lot from it. And one of my favorite quotes is, be the first, but never the last. And if you, many of you in this room are the first to break through, make sure that there are other women who you're mentoring who come through that. And I think that's a challenge for us.
So I think we all know the Einstein quote that the definition of insanity is to continue to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different outcome. And so Einstein had other brilliance other than his equations. And I think that what's exciting about the energy in this room, it's been the session where it's been the hardest to get people to stop talking at the when I was trying to move the discussion on. So I hope people will take that energy into real action. And of course, this issue permeates all of the CGI, everything that we're doing. And many people in this room have made commitments that have move this agenda forward, the agenda of women and girls. So use your voice to make sure this stays on everyone's agenda and that we move toward very concrete solutions and we all champion. And thanks to all our men for standing up there, and we'll get you up on the panel next year. So I'll now introduce an actor that you all have seen and know and respect for her acting, but what we're about to hear a little bit about and to have her honor our commitment group today is her own commitment, which is to start an NGO that is to address, it's called ASSET, the Alliance to Stop Slavery and End Trafficking. And Julia Ormond has started this herself and is tirelessly working on it, and we really honor your commitment today, and please come up.
Thank you. I just want to thank Gail and CGI and everyone in CGI for doing such a phenomenal job. It's such an exciting 3 days to take part in. And firstly, as someone who's UN Goodwill Ambassador on against trafficking and slavery, I just wanted to add my thoughts in terms of what Dee Dee raised, that if the UN Security Council can't not just talk the talk but walk the walk of bringing women into peace and security as something that is mandatorily funded by member states, maybe they could, outside of that, mandatorily fund UNIFEM, which is basically an organization that has to go out for donor funding to the public. That, to me, is a signal from the international community that says women are the long-term, stable part of the big picture. I want to talk about these commitments, but I also want to say something about my own personal experience, which particularly makes me excited about them. I went to visit women in India who are in far-to-reach rural areas of India. They're mining, they're quarrying, making handmade sand in their saris in 115-degree heat, trapped in slavery or recently liberated. And I want to confirm to you that the NGOs who had released them and the women who I met with confirmed sustainability only works if the women are part of it, are brought into it, and sustainability is only offered if it's also tied into property rights. So I'd like to invite to the stage Tim Hanstedt, the president and CEO of the Rural Development Institute, RDI. The organizations who are involved with this commitment is RDI, and these guys are looking for partnerships. So if you want to get involved in this great commitment, then please do. The Sister Fund, International Partners in Development, LLC, and they're creating an international center that recruits, mentors, and trains a body of professionals to address women's access and rights to land. And this commitment has a value of $3.67 million. It commits to create an international center for women in land, the first center of excellence focused on promoting land rights for women in developing countries. They're going to train law and policy professionals in problems related to women's access and rights to land and build policy awareness about the role land rights play in poverty alleviation for women. And, of course, all of those women's sons. RDI will train and mentor up to 10 professionals and up to 18 graduate students over 5 years, as well as provide technical assistance and program implementation support to developing country governments, international organizations, and foreign aid agencies. Thank you. This is another one that I think is amazing. I got some good ones. I guess they're all good, right? One of the key turning points for me in my life was meeting two women, one a lawyer and one a judge, who were taken from Bosnia-Herzegovina and taken to Omaska, the Serbian camp, where the multiple rapes, the atrocities that happened for many of the people who were held in the Serbian camps happened to them. The women who suffered, the men who suffered, the only way they could find dignity was to take a common vow of silence. The silence these women found when they left those camps contributed to ethnic cleansing. They made the decision to talk. They made the decision to do group therapy, to get people together to talk. They gathered thousands of testimonies. They took it to The Hague, and they participated in bringing down Milosevic. Thank God those women had the courage to speak out. Thank God they had the training to make it impactful. And thank God for this next commitment. I'd like to invite to the stage Cynthia Ryan, who's the principal of Schooner Foundation, Jennifer Buffett, co-chair of Novo Foundation, Peter Buffett, chairman of Novo Foundation, Zainab Selby, president and CEO of Women for Women International. This is a commitment galvanizing global support for women survivors of war to rebuild communities, recover lives, and realize their potential for contributing towards just and peaceful societies, all of our societies. Its value is $11 million over 3 years. Yeah. They're going to create and spearhead a public diplomacy campaign to move women from crisis and poverty to stability and self-sufficiency in countries hard hit by conflict, including Afghanistan, Bosnia and Herzegovina, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Iraq, Kosovo, Nigeria, Rwanda, and Sudan. They have more than 60,000 members to stand ready to contribute to the campaign, providing highly needed humanitarian assistance to hundreds of thousands of women. Women for Women International's approach to community change offers an innovative, scalable paradigm for grassroots post-conflict development. Having said that about the UN, I want to congratulate and thank CGI for making education such a core part of what we're doing. And tell a little story about a girl that I came across. I think one of the things that I feel is that I'm constantly meeting people who I'm stunned by their resourcefulness in the face of such challenges. And I went to Uttar Pradesh in India, and I met in a shelter with a young 12-year-old girl. She'd been trafficked into domestic slavery. And the thing about her that the NGO was sort of amazed by is that she has a name that in Indian culture means there's a legend and a story of this girl who was raped by five men. And this girl has that name. And they didn't know, should we call her the name? Should we not call her the name? Because this is a 12-year-old girl who was raped by five men. And I sat with her 7 months pregnant and talked about her story. And I sort of, I always kind of think, why are these people kind of not more down, more broken? She wasn't. She had this, she was luminous. She's 7 months pregnant. She's conflicted about the baby, but she's going through with it. She doesn't want to not have it. What brought her down later, she gives birth to this child, and the child dies. And it's the death of that child that broke her. And you walk away hearing that story thinking, I don't know how you help that person forward. What is the key to that? And months later, I hear from the NGO, she's started her education. She's beaming. She's luminous. She's energized. She's learned to read and write. And the first thing she wrote was her name. I want to invite to the stage Geeta Rao Gupta, president of the International Center for Research on Women. The organizations involved in this is ICRW, GAP Inc., and GAP Foundation. And it's a commitment to design and create a sustainable and replicable program that benefits women factory workers, their families, and communities by creating educational and workplace advancement opportunities. It has a value of $526,000 over 2 years. ICRW, with support from GAP Inc. and GAP Foundation, will establish and maintain a new initiative for women focusing on education, life skills development, and occupational advancement. The program will work intensively with a core group of women ages 18 to 30 in GAP Inc. contracted manufacturing facilities, and will directly affect an estimated 2,500 women internationally in the first 2 years. And this commitment was partially inspired by and find unique roots in the rare partnerships between NGO and corporate institutions to improve the lives of women on a global scale. Thank you.
Thank you all very much, and wow. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.